The human ear is capable of detecting changes in sound over a dynamic range. Was this incredible sensitivity brought about by years of mutations, or was it designed by the Creator? Stay tuned.
We look at the impedance matching of the ear, and it sure looks like there's an intelligence that is behind this whole system.
This is Science, Scripture, and Salvation, a Creation Radio Journal. I'm Chris O'Brien for the Institute for Creation Research. Thank you for joining us for this special edition of Science, Scripture, and Salvation. This is the third in a series called The Human Body and the Creator. Today, we'll investigate the amazing design of the human ear. We invite you to join us as we hear about this fascinating sensory system God has designed within our body. We hope this discussion will build your faith. In Proverbs 20:12, it says, "The hearing ear and the seeing eye, the Lord hath made even both of them." Dr. Ross Anderson is professor of biological sciences at the Master's College.
Let's take the human ear, for example. There are three parts to it. There's this external ear, or which is composed of this external auditory meatus or canal that most people use to stick a Q-tip in or their fingers in. At the end of that, there's what we call the eardrum or tympanic membrane. Interestingly, this membrane is not found in reptiles or amphibians per se. It is found in mammals, for example. Just on the other side of that tympanic membrane or eardrum is the middle ear. Now, the middle ear connects to the back of the throat there, and through what is called the Eustachian tube. And this middle ear, because it's continuous with the outside world, so to speak, through this tube, the act of swallowing or chewing gum or something like that helps to equalize air pressures on either side of that membrane or eardrum.
Dr. David Menton is professor of anatomy at Washington University Medical School in St. Louis.
Now, we need to say that the inner ear is full of liquid. The outer ear, as we've just said, is full of air. And what the middle ear does is to convert the energy of sound in the ear to the energy of sound in a liquid. Now, if you've ever tried to talk to somebody who is swimming under the water, you know that if you're above the water and you try to yell at this person under the water, I mean, they really can hardly hear you, no matter how loud you yell. And the problem is there's what we call an impedance mismatch going from air through water. So in order to hear, we're hearing through air in our outer ear, but we need to convert this to vibrations in liquid in our inner ear. And so the middle ear has a special device to sort of match that impedance again, and it's done with bones, three of the smallest bones in the body, and I'm sure most of our listeners have heard of them, the hammer, the anvil, and the stirrup, or the malleus, incus, and stapes, as we say in Latin.
So how does the process of converting sound from air through water work?
The handle of the hammer is sort of attached to the eardrum, and so when you wiggle the eardrum, that wiggles this tiny, tiny little bone. It's so tiny you could take all three of them and put them between your thumb and forefinger, and if you were to squeeze, nobody could tell that you had them between your thumb and forefinger. They would be completely covered by the pads of your fingertips. So the sound hits the eardrum, wiggles the handle of the hammer, which in turn is attached by the most incredibly small ligament to the anvil-shaped bone. And that sort of rocks and wiggles, and that in turn is attached by a little ligament to this stirrup-shaped bone. And because the eardrum is so much bigger in diameter than the sort of foot plate of this stirrup, there's a magnification of sound of approximately 25-fold that occurs going across the bones of the middle ear. The little stirrup then fits into a kind of an oval hole, the foot plate of the stirrup of the inner ear that's filled with liquid. And there the little foot plate goes in and out and has its effect on one of the most marvelously complex organs of the body, so complex that I can think of no way to really even begin to discuss it here without aid of photographs and drawings. This structure is called the organ of Corti, and there is where the mechanical sound is finally converted to electrical energy that goes to the brain and is perceived by us as sound.
Even as we look at that sticky substance we call earwax, there's evidence of providential care.
We produce earwax inside of our ear, and it's not entirely understood why this wax is formed, although it does form, lining the whole outer ear. And it forms a kind of a sticky, waxy surface. It's believed this may keep maybe insects from getting up into the ear. It may protect the skin of the ear. It's said to have a certain pH which prevents bacteria from developing in this rather inaccessible opening into our body.
In regards to the removal of earwax, the ear has a unique function that differs from the rest of the body's skin.
It turns out that over most of the body, our skin is growing out. That is, from deep within the skin, cells are dividing and coming up to the surface straight up like an elevator, where they kind of just fall off the surface of our skin. But in the ear canal, the cells are actually sliding like a conveyor belt. And this conveyor belt starts from precisely the center of the eardrum, goes radially until it gets to the edge of the eardrum, and then spirals on out through the external auditory canal right out to our ear.
Now that we have a better understanding of the ear, let's take a look at the concept that is inseparable to the ear's function, and that is sound.
Sound is really the compression and the rarefaction of air molecules. So it's sort of like a little air compressor. Whenever a violin string, for example, vibrates, it's sending off little compressed pulses of air. And when you think how slightly these pressures must be to be able to hear them, and of course the ear is shaped rather like a funnel. We have two of them, so we can hear stereophonic sound. That is, we have some sense of direction of where the sound is coming from, and that sort of depends on the difference in timing between the pulses of air received in one ear compared to the other. So we can tell left and right, as well as elevation and even distance to some degree.
And when we really make it a point to stop and listen in the quietest of moments, we discover that there is something going on, the sound of air moving. Dr. John Meyer is a biologist and physiologist.
The sensitivity of the human ear, in fact, is so great that if a person, particularly a young person, walks into an anechoic room, that is, a room which is totally soundproof in which no echoes are generated because of the acoustic material in the walls, if you sit down and sit quietly for a little while, two things become immediately apparent. One of which is that you begin hearing your own heart beating, and secondly, after a short period of time, you begin to hear a steady background roar. And that steady background roar is, in fact, the beating of molecules of air off of the tympanic membrane. And that is an extremely small amount of energy that is liberated in doing this, and yet the human ear is capable of handling that very, very well.
There are two tiny muscles in the ear that handle incoming noise and must make incredible adjustments to accommodate the wide range of sounds.
One called the stapedius muscle, one called the tensor tympani muscle. And when these muscles contract, they provide tension on the malleus, the incus, and the stapes in such a way that more and more sound waves, in fact, are reflected back out of the ear, and thus they provide a tremendous amount of protection to the ear and to the tiny hair cells, very delicate hair cells in the inner ear, which can be easily destroyed by long-term high-intensity sounds.
The ear also has been equipped with a built-in protective function from loud noise that would damage its sensitive sensory system. Dr. Menton explains.
What these muscles do is to dampen the little bones in the ear. In fact, the word tensor tympani is sort of interesting, because if you've gone to a concert and observed a tympani player, when they do the drum roll in the tympani, they sometimes use their hand to press the head to stop the resonance and sound when they want the roll or the sound to end. And so the tensor tympani is doing pretty much the same thing in our ear. When we hear an extraordinarily loud noise that would just overload our whole hearing system, these little muscles, the tensor tympani and the stapedius muscle, dampen the drum head or the ear head and dampen the stirrup bone before we even hear the sound.
So far, we have stated the ear's features and how it all performs. But before we bring our program to a close, there's something else we want to consider. Does the evidence we've looked at point to a creator? Or are there any valid explanations for the ear evolving over a long period of time? Well, let's consider the circumstances that would have led to the development of the two muscles that provide protection from loud noises. Dr. Meyer.
From a creationist standpoint, this becomes most interesting because when you stop and think about human history, the only time that humans in the history of the world that we know of, at least, had been subjected to loud, high-intensity sounds over long periods of time has occurred with the Industrial Revolution. And as you begin to look at this acoustic reflex, which so marvelously helps protect the inner ear, you get the very distinct impression that the acoustic reflex was a pre-adaptation that was designed into the human ear by the Creator in anticipation of modern living and modern living conditions. As a matter of fact, the acoustic reflex itself does not appear to be able to be explained by any process of natural selection. For natural selection to be occurring, you would have to have a great deal of time go by, and the Industrial Revolution, of course, has only been a relatively recent event.
So wouldn't evolution of man's ear make it far superior to those of any other animal?
In the human ear, we can hear perhaps up to 20,000 or at least 18,000 cycles per second, depending on the age of the person and the condition of the ear. But if we go into the animal world, we find that in bats, for instance, they will have the ability to detect ultrasonic sounds up as high as about 120,000 cycles per second. And from a standpoint of origins, it's interesting to contemplate that bats have a much more sensitive and much greater frequency range than humans do. So if we were to look at the supposed evolutionary levels of various organisms, we would find that in some areas, at least, that humans really didn't fare too well. Both bats and birds have sensory inputs that are many, many times more sensitive than humans.
In Psalm 94:9, we are told, "He that planted the ear, shall he not hear? He that formed the eye, shall he not see?" Dr. Menton.
So the Lord certainly has everything figured out when it comes to the ear. It certainly is one of the most remarkable of organs, so we needn't even have any question about whether the Bible tells us these are created structures. It certainly does in many places throughout Scripture.
Thank you for joining us for today's presentation on the design of the human ear. This is the third in an 8-part series titled The Human Body and the Creator. Join us next time when we'll discuss the design of the human nose. By the way, we'd like to offer you a free packet of information about creation science. Just ask for it when you get in touch with ICR. To ask for today's free offer, please call toll-free 1-800-7-GENESIS. That's 1-800-7-GENESIS. 1-800-7-GENESIS. And you can address your letters to ICR at P.O. Box 2667, El Cajon, California, 92021. ICR's website address is www.icr.org. Science, Scripture, and Salvation, a Creation Radio Journal, is a production of ICR. I'm Chris O'Brien for the Institute for Creation Research. Thanks for tuning in.